After an all-night session, House and Senate conferees have now agreed on a tax bill. Jacqueline Adams has the story.
In the 17th hour of negotiations, the House-Senate Conference Committee finally completed work on the tax cut bill. Looking a bit haggard and unshaven after the night-long session, Senator William Roth, co-author of the original Kemp Roth tax cut, called the $750 billion bill a good one.
I'm very pleased with the result. We, of course, have the things that I particularly wanted, the cross-the-board tax cut for the working people. It's a good bill. There's some things I don't particularly want or like, but overall, it's a major step forward. It's a major victory for President Reagan.
The main sticking point last night and this morning was a House provision keeping the oil depletion allowance high. Fearing a filibuster by Democratic Senators Metzenbaum and Kennedy, the Republicans finally gave in, and present law will prevail. The depletion allowance will shrink to 15% in 1984. Overall, oil-related provisions in the tax cut bill will cost the Treasury $11.4 billion. The Senate is scheduled to vote on final passage of the tax cut bill tonight, and Senate Finance Committee Chairman Robert Dole feels there is a good chance the bill will pass. The House is scheduled to vote on Tuesday. Jacqueline Adams, CBS News, Washington.
The other half of President Reagan's economic recovery program now needs only his signature. First the House and then the Senate yesterday gave final approval to the bill, calling for over $35 billion in budget cuts, the largest in American history. The House, before approving the budget reconciliation measure, voted to continue the minimum Social Security program, which is eliminated in the budget bill. But the Senate deferred action until fall. There will be Saturday work today for representatives of the air traffic controllers and the Transportation Department, working against the threat of a Monday morning strike deadline. Eric Engberg has the outlook.
The chief federal mediator says prospects for resolving the dispute before Monday's strike deadline do not look good. The head of the controllers union stormed out of yesterday's meeting with government officials refusing to extend the deadline. Facing that time pressure, the two sides will meet today and probably through the weekend, but Transportation Secretary Drew Lewis says the union's demands at present are unfair.
It's shocking to have signed a contract with the union and have him tell me it was a fair contract and come back a month later and with demands that are 15 times the size of his original demands.
Federal officials who had offered a $40 million wage and benefits package previously claim the union has upped the ante to $600 million at minimum. Transportation Department officials worked through the night to refine that cost estimate. They have said that the controllers, who would be violating federal law if they struck, face the possibility of being fired and prosecuted if they carry out their threat. Eric Engberg, CBS News, Washington.
The Washington Post says this morning that President Reagan is prepared to recommend deployment of the MX missile on air cargo planes, rather than using the controversial land-based system of multiple silos. Other sources insist, however, that no final decision has been reached on the MX. In May's prison in Northern Ireland, a seventh hunger striker has died, and there has been the usual violent reaction. John Blackstone reports from Belfast.
The death of Kevin Lynch was marked in the same way as the six previous hunger strike deaths. Whistles and banging garbage can lids woke residents of Catholic neighborhoods in the early hours of the morning. Police and military patrols were attacked with stones, bricks, and firebombs. But the scale of street violence is decreasing with each death. Last night in Belfast, trouble was easily contained in the Catholic Republican neighborhoods of the city. This may be a sign that enthusiasm for the hunger strike is dropping. The first real break in the long-running campaign came yesterday when the family of another hunger striker, Paddy Quinn, approved medical attention when Quinn slid into a coma after only 47 days without food. It's possible, however, he'll choose to continue the hunger strike against the wishes of his family. It's known that families of other hunger strikers also believe the time has come to call off the protest, perhaps suspend it for a few months. But another death seems likely, perhaps within hours. Kieran Doherty has been without food for 72 days and is described as dangerously ill. John Blackstone, CBS News, Belfast.
According to the doctors in Rome this morning, Pope John Paul II has passed an important milestone on the road to recovery. Robin Wright reports.
Today's medical bulletin offered the most positive prognosis since the Pope returned to the hospital 6 weeks ago. Dr. Emilio Trizzolti, spokesman for Gemelli Hospital, announced that John Paul is finally cured of the virus which has affected his recovery from gunshot wounds. Trizzolti said the Pope also had finally regained some of the 22 pounds he lost during his illness. Tests will be taken this week to determine when the pontiff can undergo a second operation to reverse the colostomy or intestinal bypass necessitated after the assassination attempt. Medical sources feel John Paul will probably be operated on within the next 10 days. However, Trezalti cautioned that it will take approximately 2 months for the Pope to fully recover from the operation, although he did not say if the Pope will remain in the hospital during the convalescence. However, it now appears unlikely that the Pope will be back at full steam until late autumn. The Vatican recently announced that all scheduled trips for 1981 had been canceled. Robin Wright, CBS News, Rome.
Something of a standoff continues in Gambia. Troops from neighboring Senegal have retaken most of the positions seized in a leftist coup attempt, but the rebels are holding out in some spots in the capital and threatening to kill members of the family of President Dauda Jawara. Secretary of State Haig is in Cancun, Mexico today, opening with 21 other foreign ministers a dialogue on North-South issues. Haig says he hopes to get away from what he calls the confrontational and sterile approach of the past toward less developed nations. Robert Pierpoint has more.
This is a planning session for a world summit in October in which President Reagan will join the leaders of the same 21 nations represented here today. Six of these countries are major industrialized nations, while the remaining 16 nations are politely termed less developed countries, LDCs, although they range from oil-rich Venezuela and Mexico to subsistence-level India and China. The LDCs exist mostly south of the equator, and they want the so-called North nations to help them struggle out of economic disaster. President Reagan and most of his advisors believe more strongly in self-help than international welfare, so the stage is set for some strong North-South differences along with the dialogue. Secretary Haig hopes to set up for President Reagan's visit an agenda that will provide for a friendly exchange of ideas next October and not much more. Robert Pierpoint, CBS News, Cancun, Mexico.
A senior official traveling on the Secretary of State's plane has told reporters that the U.S. is planning to build on the ceasefire between Israel and the Palestinians in Lebanon and will now seek a comprehensive settlement of the chronic strife in Lebanon. The senior official also said that the success of the ceasefire will heavily influence the decision on whether to resume shipments of F-16 aircraft to Israel. The Little Bighorn Association is holding its annual convention in San Antonio this weekend. Its mission, looking into whether the reputation of General George Custer was unduly sullied after the Indian massacre. Glenn Moyer of CBS radio affiliate WOAI has more.
The Associates organization is made up of some 400 members, all of whom pride themselves on their knowledge of and interest in Custeriana, trivia about the general. Among the topics receiving heated debate is whether or not Custer was actually in command at the Little Bighorn. Tom Bookwalter is a Dayton, Ohio attorney and an avid student of the general's life.
We don't know when Custer was killed or incapacitated by wounds. There are several hostile Indian accounts that say he was hit very early in the fight.
Bookwalter says he believes the Army may have covered up some facts about the battle, suggesting that two other divisions of the 7th Cavalry could possibly have saved Custer if their commanders had followed the general's orders to join him there. Although dedicated to spreading the truth about Custer, Bookwalter says he hopes they never answer all of the questions, because then, as he puts it, there would be no reason for the Associates to continue getting together. Glenn Moyer for CBS News, San Antonio.
The danger appears over at a giant underground propane reservoir near Moab, Utah. Lightning hit a tank there last night, causing an explosion and fire. But authorities have managed to close the valves to the main reservoir and are now letting evacuated residents of the area return. 10 people suffered injuries in the explosion and fire. Thousands of workers walked off the job at two of Canada's top three steel companies at midnight, shutting down operations in several centers. Today's strike is the third major one to hit Canada this summer, joining the 33-day-old postal strike and the 20-day-old lumber workers' strike.